Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Friday, September the 27th, day number 270 of 2013. Today, we're going to talk about Obamacare. We're going to talk about Obamacare, what happens next. You know, we had Senator Cruz this week, and then you had a big vote today in the U.S. Senate. They're sending it back to the House without the defunding, and we're going to get into all of that, exactly what is Obamacare. And our guest, Eileen Taplansky, who is a contributor to the American Thinker. She just wrote a very good article about the American Thinker, about Obamacare, over at the American Thinker, and we'll be getting into that with Ms. Taplansky here in a couple of minutes. My book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, the book is available in print. The book is available in Kindle. You can get the book at Amazon. Just go to Amazon and order your book from Amazon, both print or Kindle, or you can go to our website. And if you go to our website, one of the features of the website is that we will dedicate the book for you. So if you order the book directly from us, we will endorse it. We will sign it to you. And some people really like that. I always tell the example of a fellow who requested a book or had a book dedicated for his English teacher, or Spanish teacher, I should say. When he was in high school, the Spanish teacher was a Cuban who had left Cuba in the 60s. And he became very fond of his teacher and has kept in touch with the teacher over the years. So he had me dedicate a book to that teacher. And the nice thing about it is the teacher read the book and sent me a note saying that he liked it. And that, of course, is one of the great benefits of writing a book, is when people tell you that they read the book and then they enjoy it. So that's always a lot of fun. CubanosInWisconsin.com. Check it out. And hopefully you'll like the book and you'll tell me about it. On this day in history, this is a personal connection here because my father and my two uncles in Cuba graduated from Jesuit schools. But on this day in 1540, the Jesuits were founded. That's almost 500 years ago, if you can believe it. So happy birthday to the Jesuits. We'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. It's always a great honor to say hello to Eileen Taplansky. How are you?
Fine, thank you very much, and I'm pleased to be on your show again. It's intriguing that you mentioned about the Jesuits being founded in 1540, because today in the Hebrew calendar, or the Jewish calendar, it's Simchat Torah, which is when the Jews all over the world begin, they finish reading the Torah, and then they begin again, so that the circle is never broken. So it's very intriguing that we have these connections in the religious world of different types.
Yes, you're exactly right. And the one thing, of course, about the Jesuits is that they've done a lot of work in education. And as I mentioned, in Cuba, when my mom and dad were growing up in Cuba, that was a very common thing to do, was to go to Jesuit schools. And my father and my two uncles, as well as my grandfather and my two great uncles, I guess that would be it. All the men in our family graduated from Jesuit schools in this small town. And another graduate of Jesuit schools is Fidel Castro. A lot of people don't know that, but he also went to a Jesuit school in Cuba, although the Jesuits in Cuba have took away the, not literally, but I mean, they don't talk too much about him when they talk about famous Cubans who went to Jesuit school. So, yes, happy I guess it's 473. That is a long time, 473 years. Well, we've had you on the show before, but I always like our guests to talk a little bit about themselves. So please tell us about yourself a little bit.
I'm a college adjunct instructor, although because of Obamacare, I have lost hours. But we'll make do. We'll get through. I've also been busy in the past, in the 60s and 70s, with the Soviet Refusnik program, where I was one of the very many who wrote letters to the Jews in Russia who were not permitted to get out. And finally, when Anatoly Sharansky, now Natan Sharansky, escaped, it was a very proud moment because little people like ourselves, if you will, really made a grand effort to expose and publicize what was going on there and finally seek his freedom and others as well.
Right. Now, you wrote an article. I mentioned that you wrote an article this week over at the American Thinker about Obamacare. And I thought it was a very interesting article. You went through a very good description of all of the negative consequences of Obamacare. What led you to write an article like this?
Well, I was reading each day of all the different companies that basically are really dropping health benefits. And the title of the article is The Wrecking Ball Known as Obamacare. And as I was doing the research, I discovered that Trader Joe's was dropping health benefits for part-time workers. SeaWorld Entertainment was capping hours for part-timers from 32 hours to 23. Walmart was only hiring temporary employees. That's not generally done during the upcoming holiday season. Land's End had cut employee hours to no more than 29 hours a week. And it goes on and on, and I'm thinking, my goodness, here we are going to be having raised premiums on health care, and people are losing work or being reduced by their work. This is going to be an economic freight train wreck, and I don't know that a lot of people are really aware of it until it actually hits them personally.
Right. Now, interestingly, this week they've come out with these new premiums that I guess will be available next week. Although some places will be opening next week, other places are not opening. Not all of the exchanges will actually be registering people next week. That's another problem of Obamacare, that it's not quite ready to go. But anyway, they are forecasting that the premiums are going to be much lower for people. And do you think that that's going to persuade a lot of people that, hey, this is not so bad, I'm paying less? I mean, a lot of people will not make the connection with the fact that, yeah, they're paying less because somebody else is subsidizing their premium.
Well, exactly. You know, less than what and more than what. Basically, premiums are going up due to Obamacare, and the quality of the coverage is, in many cases, going down. If you look over at the Heritage Foundation, which is where I get a lot of information, instead of just raising premiums, Obamacare is inflicting a double whammy, forcing the American people to buy health plans costing more than what they paid previously, and then providing limited access to provider networks that may not be able to find a doctor that will treat them. So I hardly call that a good deal for anybody.
Right. You know, there's two things about Obamacare that I find very disappointing. Number one is that we've been hearing so much about universal care, but as it turns out, I think you mentioned this in your article too, as it turns out, it's not universal. A lot of people are still going to be without Obamacare. That's going to be a shock, I think, to maybe a lot of the people who bought into the universal care narrative. And the second thing that really bothers me is the fact that there are so many waivers and so many exceptions that in order for this law to actually, you know, be implemented, a bunch of people had to be exempted from it. And now, of course, the latest one being members of Congress and their staff. And I have a hard time with laws that do not apply to everybody. It's almost un-American. I mean, I know I asked you a couple of questions there, but I just wanted to get your reaction first to the universal issue and then to the, you know, to the selective enforcement.
Sure. Well, actually, after all is said and done, there's still going to be 31 million people who are going to be remaining uninsured. And this boggles the brain, but it is true. This has been cited by many reputable sources. I think your second point about the exemptions, it really reeks of hypocrisy. You know, Obamacare explicitly required members of Congress and their staff to participate in the new health insurance exchanges. However, now we find out that they've made a change so that they quietly announced it was going to create a special exemption from the law for Congress. No other American citizen is getting that special exemption from the costs imposed by the law. And instead, all of us, tens of millions of Americans, are going to be looking at higher premium costs, pardon me, reduced hours on their jobs, and real job losses while Congress is merrily getting subsidies and playing cute with us. To me, right. That's rank hypocrisy and disingenuousness.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, they keep making the argument. In fact, the governor of Kentucky, who's a Democrat, wrote a column, an opinion, I guess op-ed, that's what they call them, today saying, you know, hey, you know, this is the law of the land, get over it. I mean, talking to people like you and me saying it's the law of the land, get over it. But my response to him, if I had a chance to chat with him, would be, well, this is not the law of the land. The law of the land that was passed in March of 2010 has been changed and amended a bunch of times, all kinds of waivers, including this one that you mentioned about the Congress. All these changes, Eileen, were done without consulting with Congress. And I find that to be rather incredible that there are liberals in this country who are willing to say, well, we don't care that the president doesn't have to consult Congress. Well, what if a Republican president decided to, you know, enforce laws selectively like that in the future? Wouldn't they be upset with that? I mean, I think there comes a point, you know, my point is this, that, you know, people can have honest disagreements about the role of government, whether government should do health care or not. I don't think it should, but, you know, people can have honest disagreements about that. But what really disturbs me is I hope that we can all agree that a law should apply to everybody the same way, and this one doesn't, and that really bothers me, Eileen.
It's interesting because one of the best articles that I ever read at the American Thinker was by a Nigerian lady, L.E. Ikenga, and on June 25, 2009, she wrote a piece entitled Obama the African Colonial, and she goes back to say that Barack Obama is really nothing more than an old-school African colonial who's on his way to turning America into one of the developing nations that you really read about. And as we see, as he's going, he feigns repulsion against Western civilization, but he certainly enjoys it. Just check out all the vacations. But in essence, he also sees us as not as free-thinking individuals who know how to operate and allow us to just be the freedom, you know, have the freedom and creativity that's made America great. And towards the end of the article, she talks about what Obama is doing to us right now. And remind you, this was in 2009. He's going to convince us that clinging to any aspect of our identity or history is bad. Note how he just puts us down on a regular basis. He's confiscating the wealth and resources of the area. We can't mine for anything now with the coal mines. We also don't have the ability now to go in and get oil from our own country. He also has this attitude of convincing the masses that the upper crust university education makes him better than the rest of us, even though we still can't figure out what his grades were, or we still don't have any articles written when he was the president of the Harvard Law Review. And then he's lying to the people and telling them the progress is being made, even though it is very clear now, if anybody opens up his or her eyes, that things are getting very, very bad in this country. Unemployment is sky high. We're losing money. I think it was, 57,000 is about the median, quote me, you know, not exactly right. And now we've dropped about $2,000 less. So our means of being able to purchase items is going down as well. And the last thing that she talks about, an African colonial president would be using every available media outlet to perpetuate the belief that you and your followers are the enlightened ones and that those who refuse to support you are just barbaric, uncivilized, ignorant curmudgeons. And it is very clear that Obama has nothing but disdain for America and for the people. He lies to us constantly. Pinocchio is having a ball watching what goes on regularly with this president. When we ask him for transparency, we can't get it on Benghazi, Fast and Furious. I know that Obamacare now is taking center stage, but I haven't forgotten about those people that were murdered. I haven't forgotten about the gun running, and we cannot get any answers. They just sweep it under the rug. And it really is symptomatic of the kind of man that he is, and the Democrats and sadly the media are going along with it. So
right.
It's really time for us to regain our rights as Americans and speak up.
That's right. And you mentioned Fast and Furious, and I think a point that I try to make anytime Fast and Furious comes up, a point that I always like to remind the listeners is that it wasn't just Agent Terry who was killed, as sad as that is, or that other agent who was killed on the Querétaro Highway. It's the 300 to 400 Mexicans who have been killed by these weapons. And somehow, I mean, obviously, they're not constituents, so they're not going to have Congress people talk about them. But they are innocent human beings who were killed by these weapons, the Fast and Furious weapons. Let me quickly ask you about Senator Cruz. I thought he did a pretty good job. He put Obamacare on the front page, which is where I think the Democrats don't want to talk about Obamacare. So your reaction to Senator Cruz?
I was stunned by the vitriol against this gentleman. I cannot understand, and this is coming from people that I really admire, George Will, Charles Krauthammer. These are people that I look to for edification. And the fact that it seems that everybody is against Ted Cruz, calling it a political ploy, is stunning to me. That's like saying the Boston Tea Party was a political ploy. I would say this is the first round in really waking up America. I think Ted Cruz, frankly, was very courageous for what he did, and he really laid it out on the table. Now, I think we're stuck with Obamacare. I don't see any change at this point. But when more and more people begin to realize the true impact of what's going on, they're going to remember what Ted Cruz said and what he did, and they're going to rally around him, and I think that's terrific. So once again, I'm a minority, but that's okay.
No, but I think he did a good job. I mean, I think, you know, I always knew that it wasn't going to change the vote. But I do think that now that it's going back to the House, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, that the Senate has basically sent it back to the House. And I think what the House should do right now, and let me get your reaction to this, I think what the House should do right now is say, okay, we'll fund it, but it's going to have to be without the exceptions. Everybody's going to have to participate, members of Congress, every single person in the country, no waivers. It's going to be implemented universally for everybody. I think that's a winning issue politically.
Absolutely.
If you send it back to the Senate and you force Democrat senators to vote for that, I don't see how anybody can – well, maybe if you're Maxine Waters or Dick Durbin and you have no political – consequences, I can understand. But I think a lot of the Democrats in competitive elections, I think they may break and have to vote for the elimination of all these exemptions and waivers. So I like that idea. What do you think?
I think it's a very clear cut. When you play poker, you know, you put the cards on the table there. Look, you like it so much, then you do it. And if you don't, then the American people have a right to go after you in town councils and letters to the editor, et cetera, saying, well, if it's so good for us that you keep putting it on us and demanding it, why isn't it good for you? I'm always reminded of the unjust law that Martin Luther King used to talk about, that it's okay for some but not okay for others. I mean, even a child can understand the inequity here and the unfairness of it, and also the very fact that this kind of thing is promoting divisiveness among people. So you have one labor union getting it, the other one not. And what's intriguing is if somebody works in the same company but is not a union member, he's going to be paying more than the other ones who get a subsidy. I mean, what better situation for resentment and, God forbid, violence?
That's right.
It's going to happen. I mean, it's being set up as such. And I think your article on the 26th, when you were comparing Wendy Davis' filibuster in Texas and how the media reacted so kindly to her, but when Ted Cruz does it, you know, he's a wacko bird. Again, double standard constantly when it comes to these issues.
Yeah.
Instead of dealing with the issue, it becomes an emotional tirade.
Right. And in that case, I mean, the media bias there was so obvious that even, I think, Politico mentioned it, and I make a reference to Politico on that. Let me ask you one last question here. I should have asked you this at the top, but how long have you been a contributor to American Thinker?
I think it's, 13? I'm not good with numbers. I think it was 2008 or 2009. I don't actually recall. I'm sorry. But it's been a few years, yeah. I mean, the first article that I sent in, they rejected, and now that I look back, quite rightly, they rejected it. It was babble. And then I cleaned up my act a little bit, and the editors are kind enough to be very clear with what they're looking for, and I feel very fortunate that I have an outlet. It's kind of my way of dealing with this, because a lot of the folks that I'm around really don't want to talk about this or start to put me down or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that there are outlets like American Thinker, and there's others out there, obviously. Mm-hmm. American Thinker is the one that there's also Babalu, and that of course is a different audience. That has a lot to do with Cuban issues and Cuban American issues and Latin American issues, and I post over there as well. But I think it's great for citizens like you and me to have these outlets, to publish and to get it out there.
I think someone used the term citizen journalist, and I kind
That's
of
right.
wear that label with pride. If I can do my little bit to inform and educate and alert people, then I'll say that I've done what I need to do on this earth.
Right.
It's not going to be an easy job, but we each have to do something.
Well, it seems, you know, you may recall when people like you and I were basically restricted to letters to the editor.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, I've had some letters to the editor published here in Dallas. I even got lucky one time and had one published in the Wall Street Journal that I made a copy of it and showed it to everybody. How cool,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
But, you know, those were the days where maybe once or twice a year you got published, because obviously they had to get other people in. Now I don't have to worry about the letters. I haven't done a letter to the editor in 10 years. Now, if I want to say something, I write it myself. I submit it to American Thinker or whatever. I have a way of putting my two cents into the conversation. And every time I write one of these things and it gets published, I feel like, if maybe not a citizen journalist, I feel like a citizen columnist. I put my two cents into.
So even people like myself who are somewhat computer challenged do have an outlet, and that's important to know. If when I tell my students, for example, what's the First Amendment, and I remind them about the press and about freedom of speech, well, if we don't use it, we will lose it. There is a miasma going on in Washington that wants to take away these rights, and we really do have to stand up for them. You know, Simon Wiesenthal once said that freedom is not a gift. You have to fight for it every day. And we
That's
are up
right.
against somebody who really does want to take it away.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think Ronald Reagan had a similar quote to that, you know, you have to fight for freedom every single day, because you never know when someone will take it away. I mean, if you take it for granted, you're going to lose it. And I know I don't like to compare everything to Cuba, but my parents can tell you that losing your freedom is a very painful thing. You just wake up one morning and your freedoms are gone, and you go, wait a minute, what happened? Well, mm-hmm. you didn't. You can lose your freedoms very, very easily. Well, can you give us a hint about your next article? Have you been working on anything that you can give us a hint about?
I'm sorry, I really don't have anything right this minute. I've really been working on this Obamacare thing. In fact, I'm sitting in the kitchen right now and just looking at a lot of pieces of paper and saying, oh my goodness, there's just one thing after another. Obamacare will lead to single-payer health care.
Right.
Medicare coverage is going to be taken away from the Medicare Advantage plans, which is going to affect elderly, particularly within the Black and Hispanic population. I have another article that talks about Obamacare and the subsidies. For example, the Manhattan Institute basically discovered that 27-year-olds are going to face rate increases as high as 279%.
Right.
Rates are going to go up 97% for men and 55% for women. These numbers are just astonishing. They're breathtaking in their enormity. People are truly going to become sick looking at these numbers.
Right. No, I think you're exactly right. And then I hope that they will get very angry at the people who voted for Obamacare in 2014. They punish them. That's what I hope happens.
Well, I hope so, but I just am a little bit concerned that the irrevocable harm is going to be very hard to undo. Once you have an entitlement program, we all know it doesn't go away. And
right.
from the point of view of an employer, I can understand why employers want to deep six their health plans. It's a lot less expensive for them. It originally started in the 40s as an inducement to get people to work. So that's going to be a problem. That's obviously, the landscape has changed completely. If we can get back to something different, there are other ways to do this and do it properly and helpfully, mm-hmm. but we're not there yet. They're not talking about that.
Right. So well, and the healthcare problems that we have, you know, like pre-existing conditions and some of the other things that many of us wanted to reform, this could have been, that they could have been done without Obamacare. I mean, Obamacare is it's like going to the doctor and saying, "Doctor, my knee hurts," and the doctor gives you a totally different or gives you a bypass operation or something that you really didn't need. And that's how I feel about Obamacare. We didn't need it.
I think, Silvio, the real problem is that this is not about health care. This is about government takeover. And until people understand that, they really can't assess the situation. I came across a very interesting site, and I just want to pass it on to your listeners. If they want to take a very short quiz about what really is going on, they might want to go to healthreformquestions.com. I just took it the other day, and it gives really the essence of some of the things that are coming up that people really don't know or are a little bit confused about. So it's healthreformquestions.com, and it might be helpful.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I I've said this many, many times, that this is not really about health care. This is about having the government sticking its nose in places that it didn't exist before. And I think this is what it's all about. And I want to say one last thing, too. I also think this is about registering Democrats.
Absolutely.
Because when you've got that much information about people and you're, you know, these navigators are sitting there helping you fill out a form, that and registering you as a Democrat is not a very big jump.
That's exactly right. And by the way, these navigators are not going to be trained particularly well. There was even a little scare, and I don't think that it's an untruth that some of these folks are not even being checked for criminal backgrounds. This is frightening, all the information that other strangers are going to have about us that we really can't even appeal. And for those people who think that they have private insurance and Obama health care won't affect them, they should note that in Section 1311 of the law, it does empower the Secretary of Health and Human Services to dictate how doctors treat privately insured patients and what questions patients must be asked. So nobody's off the hook here. You know, we may have an extension for a year if you're within a large company and say, okay, fine, I'm okay. But we're not okay. It's just a matter of when the sword's going to fall. But the Damocles sword is hanging over all of us right now.
Right, and that's the other thing that bothers me: the amount of discretion that this law gives to basically the executive branch. I mean, that you have the Secretary of Health and Human Services has a lot of discretion, and I just feel that that's. I don't know how many of the people who voted for this law really understood that. But I guess that's another topic. But I do want to thank you so much for joining us today. Keep writing those wonderful articles, and I hope we can have you back sometime. It's so much fun to talk to you.
And thank you for doing your important work. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you
well
so
now.
Much. Thank
okay.
you so much. Eileen Toplansky, as she was indicating, a college professor as well as a contributor to The American Thinker. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Silvio Cantu in Dallas, Texas. This is one of the neat things about reading American Thinker, and one of the reasons that I enjoy publishing whenever I can over at the American Thinker, but I enjoy reading it every day because you get to meet people like Eileen, like Frank Burke, like Rick Moran, Richard Baer, some of the other people that we've had on the show, Tom Lifeson. I mean, all kinds of interesting people that we've had on the show because of American Thinker, and because they published something over at the American Thinker. So I just want to, again, if you're not checking the American Thinker every day, you're really missing out on a lot of good, serious opinion. And Eileen Toplansky is a great example of what I'm talking about. Well, that's going to do it for today, folks. We'll be touching base with my good friend Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda on Sunday as we do our week in review. And I'm sure we're going to do a great deal about what's happening in Washington and everything happening with Obamacare, the big topic. But let's not lose sight of the fact that there's foreign policy also going on. You got Syria and other issues going on. So it isn't just about Obamacare this week. I'm sure we'll talk to Bill a little bit about Syria and what's happening in the foreign policy. Everybody have a wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.